It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we look back at anger in the year 2022. What got people mad, concerns about what may feel like growing hostility, and how we can address it. First, if you've ever dealt with depression, bipolar disorder, or another mental health problem, your own or in your family, you truly are not alone, though it may feel like it. According to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, 1 in 5 American adults will experience a mental illness. But regardless of the numbers, dealing with mental health can be a lonely or isolating experience. Our next guest has provided treatment for decades. In a new book, he offers advice, resources, and hope, and lessons he's learned from people living with mental health conditions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If this is your story or someone in your family, what were some of the ways, hopefully, you were able to find connections with others? Was there advice or a skill or a mechanism that helped you have a happier life or a family member have a happier life? Do you have questions for our guest about finding resources, making connections? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Ken Duckworth is the Chief Medical Officer for the National Alliance on Mental Illness and author of the book, You Are Not Alone, The NAMI Guide to Navigating Mental Health, with advice from experts and wisdom from real people and families. Dr. Duckworth, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
I want to go to your origin story in some ways. This book you've written is a book I think you wish your family had access to when you were a kid and your father was dealing with mental illness. Can you tell a little bit about that story and that inspiration?
Yes, Tyler, this is exactly the book that I could have used, Rob. You know, my family felt so alone. My dad was carted off by the police when I was 7 or 8 years old in Philadelphia. And not long after, we're in a U-Haul driving to Michigan. And 7-year-old me is like, does this have anything to do with that? And so we moved to Michigan, and I'm a proud Big Ten graduate, not of the University of Wisconsin, I should say. But my experience of this was there was so much silence and shame around my dad's illness. My dad was loving and kind. So because I was trying to make sense of it, Rob, I decided to go to medical school and I'll learn everything I could about it. And when I go to bookstores, I still only see memoirs, which are interesting but not practical, and textbooks, which no one reads. How do I know that, Rob? I write chapters in textbooks. And I think... and no one ever reads them. I think it would have helped my family to see other people like me. So this is the book that I wanted for my own life. And it's a gift that NAMI allowed me to write it for the rest of us. It's full of ordinary people, people like you and me, carpenters, teachers, policemen, doctors who are living with mental health conditions or in their families. They use their names because shame has been such a primary problem in delaying help seeking, Rob. So this is the book I always wanted for myself, and happily, NAMI now has this book.
And a key theme in your book is the title of the book, You Are Not Alone. Anybody experiencing this, especially maybe a decade, 2 decades ago, this was a unique experience for them, something, as you were saying, people don't talk about. You're hoping, I think, that that's changing, and you're hoping to change that.
That's exactly right, Rob. No matter who you are, there's people from 11 different race and ethnicities, 50 different occupations, 25 religious affiliation, and 38 states, including your fair state of Wisconsin. People share what they've learned, what they've been through, how they've managed, how they figured out how to communicate. The idea is there is expertise in real people, that if you've lived with bipolar disorder for 15 years, you've probably learned something.
And you talk about the idea of recovery. This is something you learned very directly from people dealing with mental health conditions. The importance of, you know, if I'm suffering from something like this, that I help set the terms of what recovery means to me. Can you talk about the value of that?
Yeah, the idea that each person has their own definition of recovery, and whether that's stability, the ability to give to others, the ability to function in relationships. You know, that's a North Star for people. This is what I want. This is what I value. And I asked each of the 70 or so people with first-person experience what their definition of recovery was. And there's a whole chapter called Themes of Recovery. I just listened to people what does it mean to you, this recovery journey? I also talked to about 60 families of people with mental health conditions. And some people said, you know, I have bipolar disorder and my spouse is dealing with addiction. So I'm a family member and I have a first person experience.
Talking to Dr. Ken Duckworth, author of the new book, You Are Not Alone, The NAMI Guide to Navigating Mental Health with advice from experts and wisdom from real people and families. If you're willing, you can share your maybe experience, your own or a family member's at 800-642-1234. Was there something that helped you? Was there a challenge getting help that you needed? Do you have questions for our guest? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Duckworth, you talk about what may be an underutilized resource, peer support, the value of people dealing with similar things, helping each other out. What is out there? How can we make better use of it?
Yeah, one of the things that came really clear to me, Rob, is what the value of people with similar conditions. I had a chapter I was going to call The Power of Community, and it would have been malpractice not to change it to The Powers of Peers and Community, because so many people told me that a person who's living with, let's say, schizophrenia, coach them on how to manage voices, or a person living with depression, coach them on how to parent while struggling, that the professional world is very valuable. This is a both and book. You know, I like professionals. I like psychotherapy. I think medication is a useful tool much of the time. But the thing that we've overlooked somehow is the wisdom gained from real people who've lived with things. And so all I did was ask them what they'd learned. And it turns out there's about 2,000 years of lived experience in this book, 130 people dealing with things for 15 to 20 years on average. 2,000 years, that's a lot of time. Becoming a peer and helping others is a very profound theme for a lot of people. The idea that they could bring meaning to their experience of suffering is extremely powerful and often very healing. And in helping others, we of course help ourselves.
Bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Eau Claire. Bob, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Bob?
I want to tell you about my experience. I went through a master's degree program, and I was suffering from severe chronic depression and never told anyone. I could have received an Oscar for my acting awards.
Mm.
But yet when I found this peer recovery center in Eau Claire, just the ability for me to talk about what was going on and to feel safe about it and not to scare anybody about it because they had all been through it changed my life incredibly.
Bob, I'm so glad to hear that you had that experience.
Bob, thanks a lot for sharing that. Dr. Duckworth, can you talk about if somebody's listening and saying, I want what Bob got there, how do they go about finding some kind of peer support network like Bob found?
Well, I don't know how Bob found it in Eau Claire, but NAMI Wisconsin is a strong NAMI affiliate. The first NAMI meeting in 1979 was actually in Wisconsin. And what I want to say to people is Bob is one of tens of thousands of people that has benefited from a peer support culture. It's so powerful, and it isn't something professionals particularly understand. I say this as a card-carrying psychiatrist. We have undervalued the power of peers and the power of learning from each other. So, Bob, I want to thank you for sharing what you have learned, and I'm delighted to hear that it was so helpful to you.
And thanks again for sharing that with us, Bob. I appreciate that. Dr. Duckworth, in the book you talk about, you know, NAMI itself offers some things like this. There are clubhouses. I know some of my friends work at Fountain House in New York City. We have clubhouses in Wisconsin. Could you talk about some of the more formal peer support things like that and some of the informal ones you write about?
I interviewed someone from Fountain House because it's the original community clubhouse, right? There's more than 400 clubhouses across the world, and they're undoubtedly throughout every major city in Wisconsin. And this is a social organization where people can find connection and people who care about them. And I think it's really important that you can be part of a community. So I interviewed them because in the 1940s, when they closed a big state hospital in New York, a group of people that had been meeting at the state hospital said, they called their group, We Are Not Alone, or WANA. They've wanted to feel part of a community. And so as I researched that, that isn't a fact. I knew of Fountain House, of course. Every community psychiatrist knows of Fountain House. I was so touched that their idea of how to conceptualize their work was as We Are Not Alone. NAMI also has support groups, and they have a peer-to-peer support group. So if you contact NAMI Wisconsin, a very strong affiliate, you will find resources for families and for individuals, both in terms of formal classes and also support groups in person and online.
We're talking to Dr. Ken Duckworth, Chief Medical Officer at NAMI, with us today to talk about his new book. It's called You Are Not Alone, The NAMI Guide to Navigating Mental Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have an experience to share, your own or maybe in your family, or a question for our guest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, hear from more of you coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We pick up our conversation with Dr. Ken Duckworth, Chief Medical Officer for NAMI. His new book is You Are Not Alone, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got a TBI, traumatic brain injury, on June 9th of 21, and the thing that helped me greatly is the Facebook groups. They kind of tell me, like, what to expect and what, because I'm on so many different drugs. I asked their opinion about drugs and stuff. It's been a nightmare. I'd rather have lost a limb than have the brain injury. But, like, I just got out of the ER for a headache. I get headaches every day. It's been ridiculous. But the support on the Facebook groups is huge for me.
Nick, thanks for the call. Sorry you've experienced this. Dr. Duckworth, sorry.
Sorry to hear that. It sounds like you're crowdsourcing both support and input, Nick. And this is one of the things I think we need to do, because we have such a shortage of licensed professionals. I like licensed professionals, but I'm glad you're also getting support from a community. And I thank you for calling in. I think this is a underappreciated aspect of healing.
Thanks a lot for that call. I know, Dr. Duckworth, when we start to search for things on the internet, we may find a good support group that's really helpful. We may find things that steer us in weird directions. Do you have advice on navigating that?
Boy, it's a good question. Well, again, I like NAMI Wisconsin. They're reputable. They're thoughtful. They've been at it since 1979, where the first NAMI convention was held. They might be a good resource to start with. And if they can't provide you what you need, I bet they can help you find what you need.
Thanks again for sharing your story. Suzanne joins us now in Madison. Suzanne, hello. Oops, Suzanne, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. What did you want to share with us?
Well, I just want to say I first heard Dr. Duckworth talk about his book at a NAMI conference last year, and I'm glad it's come out. And today I had the privilege of celebrating my 37-year-old son's birthday with him. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was 17. And today he is in recovery. He lives alone. He works alone. He owns a car that he makes payments on and maintains. He travels on his own. And recovery is real. And I really want to get that message out that we just have to sometimes wait a long time for it. And it took our son over 12 years until he was ready to really work on recovery. And it's a tough illness, and having mental illness is very tough, and families just have to give absolute love and absolute support. I'm also a family-to-family teacher for NAMI.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Suzanne. Dr. Duckworth.
Suzanne, thank you for everything you're doing, and happy birthday to your son at 37. I find a lot of people find a path, and not every path is the same. And it usually isn't quick. And so thank you for teaching family to family. Rob, this is a program NAMI has developed, which has been demonstrated in randomized controlled trials to increase hope and empowerment for family members who have adult children with serious mental health conditions. So, Suzanne, congratulations on you and your son's success, and I wish you all the best.
Suzanne, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Dr. Duckworth, you say that in the darkest moments, someone experiencing a schizophrenia or major depression or bipolar disorder, things might look hopeless for them and their family members. You are really hoping to highlight stories like Suzanne to say things are bad now, but they can get better.
Here's other people who have been in this place, did not see a way out, and they found a path. And again, for an acute crisis, you'd still want to contact 988, which is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and not NAMI Wisconsin. So if you're in an acute moment of desperation and you need an acute crisis, that isn't a NAMI resource. That's a national crisis counseling line. But I think it's really important to reflect upon the fact of the number of people who do well. And Rob, I also see this among practitioners who work in hospitals. They see people when they're sick, and they don't get to watch the whole movie of the person living independently, having a job, having relationships, having a car. They may be taking medicines. They may still have symptoms, right? We don't have cures, but we do have a series of meaningful lives.
Thanks again for that call. We are talking to Dr. Ken Duckworth. His new book is called You Are Not Alone. Back to your calls now. Andy is with us in Green Bay. Andy, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I guess I'm an alcoholic, and at one of my group meetings, I brought up the fact that I deal with depression. And it was amazing to me the number of people around the room that are also dealing with depression. And my question is, does depression lead to addiction, or does addiction lead to depression?
What a fantastic question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think the short answer is we don't know. But we do know that there are co-travelers. And we also know that the cultures of the approaches in mental health and addiction support can be in conflict. So I interviewed a bunch of people who were told in AA, for example, not in every AA group, I like AA, you know, to not take medicines. And I talked to people in the mental health space who were told, you know, until you get your addiction under control, we can't treat your depression. So these are two different cultures. The truth is we don't know why they co-travel. We do know that they do co-travel. And we have to be respectful of the idea that each culture has a tradition and has come to that place for their own reasons. But we have to be able to integrate them. You need to be able to deal with your addiction and your depression at the same time.
Andy,
and
thanks.
Thanks, Andy.
Andy, thanks, and best as you deal with both of those problems. Dr. Duckworth, one of the most striking things to me was your chapter on advocacy and how people dealing with mental illness, one of the most powerful things that helped them was helping other people.
I want to say each of the people who called in today is an advocate. Mm-hmm. They're sharing their experience so that someone else feels less alone. Again, advocacy is a critical aspect for many people of taking it to the next level. And I love the idea that changing something, you know, advocating for more resources or testifying at the state legislature or coaching another person as a peer specialist, becoming a sponsor in AA, these are all advocacy steps. It solidifies the person's own experience of recovery and extends beyond. I think that's a critical aspect for many people. I don't think every person has to do this. I just heard it in so many of my interviews. It was really powerful for me.
Dr. Duckworth, we just have a couple minutes left. Now, people dealing with mental health problems, their own or in the family, they may be at a lot of different points in that story. If they haven't taken a first step to reach out and find connections, what would you say to hopefully help inspire them?
Well, you have a variety of resources, and, you know, clubhouses are one, NAMI Wisconsin's another, AA is another. There's a lot of people who are interested in supporting your recovery. And remember, a life in a snapshot is not a life in a movie. And when I see somebody who's 17 years old and is struggling with suicidality, particularly if they like baseball, I like to remind them that they're in the first or second inning of a 9-inning game. And, you know, here in Boston, we have the Red Sox. We had a terrible season. If you're down 3 runs in the first inning, the game really isn't over. It really isn't over. And finding other people who've been where you've been and can offer you some support, suggestions, tips, pointers, and love, you know, is often a really great tool. For the book, all the royalties go to NAMI. This is a love gift on my part for my father and for everyone like him, you know, because I hadn't seen a book where real people share what they learned. And so this is something I gave to NAMI as a love gift.
Dr. Duckworth, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Dr. Ken Duckworth, Chief Medical Officer for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He joined us to talk about his new book, You Are Not Alone, The NAMI Guide to Navigating Mental Health, with advice from experts and wisdom from real people and families. A couple numbers for you. Dr. Duckworth mentioned the crisis hotline, the suicide prevention hotline. That's 988. For non-acute crises, the NAMI hotline, excuse me, he mentioned, you can call or text 800-950-6264. That's 800-950-6264. Coming up after the news, 2022 was, among other things, what felt like, anyway, a pretty angry year. A Wisconsin psychologist joins the show for a look at the things that made us angry over the last year, how we can turn that anger into something more positive. He says there are good uses for anger if we know how to handle it and what to do with it. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the author of a new book tells us how the lines between politics and entertainment have gotten blurry and how that's changed campaigns and candidates. Now, Thanksgiving and other upcoming winter holidays can mean seeing friends and family you may not have seen for a while. Those interactions may come with mixed emotions, especially given divisions we saw play out around the country and around Wisconsin in the recent midterm elections. There's a good chance for people, maybe you included, to feel some anger at some point during the festivities. It may have felt like there was a lot of anger out there in 2022. Our next guest is a Wisconsin psychologist who studies anger and what we do with it, for better or worse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you get that feeling that we Americans are angrier and angrier over the course of the years lately? Do you see it more in your own life, in your own personal interactions, in person, or maybe online? Have you found ways to take anger and do something positive with it? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Ryan Martin is a professor of psychology and associate dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW-Green Bay. He's the author of the book, Why We Get Mad, How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. Ryan, welcome back to Central Time.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I don't know if there's an official anger-o-meter, but you know, there's this feeling that we're getting mad. We're getting angrier in the U.S. Over the years. Do you think there's anything to that?
I do, and I will be the first to admit I wish there was an anger-o-meter. it'd be great if we had that kind of information. But in the absence of that, we've got to do what we can with the data we have. And, you know, if we look to things like instances of road rage, which seem to be on the increase, instances of road rage shootings, which seem to be on the increase. If we look at reports from service providers who talk about anger toward them and hostility toward them being on the increase. Even if we look at things like school fights, or at least reports of school fights, which at least last year were on the increase, we see lots of evidence that there seems to be a problem right now.
How much of that do you think is pandemic related? There's a lot of frustration and uncertainty and maybe fear. Is that spilling over into some of those manifestations you just listed?
Yeah, I really think it is. I think that's a big piece of it. I think it has both a direct and indirect consequence or impact. I think the direct piece is that there's a lot of frustration over the pandemic specifically, not just back when we were sort of in the thick of it, but still there are people who don't like the way it was handled, who continue to not like the way it was handled. I think that is driving some of the anger people are feeling. But I also think there's a much more, as you mentioned, a more indirect implication here, that it raised stress levels for people. It added to uncertainty. It added to economic difficulties for people in ways. And all of those things, which are not little things at all of those things, I think, have a tendency to put people on edge in ways that exacerbate their anger when they experience a provocation.
Okay, and then there's politics. And politics has always had the, you know, potential to divide people and make people angry at one another. We're in a pretty polarized, divided time right now where people kind of identify with their political team and against the other political team. Is that a driver, as you see it, of anger lately?
Yeah, I absolutely think it is. And I think it also ends up manifesting itself in lots of ways. I think we see everything you talked about of people identify with a particular party or a particular candidate, and then either, you know, when other people say bad things about that candidate, they react. When that candidate struggles, they react. I think all of that is playing itself out. I also think, though, that there's a piece of it that, as you said, we're really increasingly polarized. And part of what that means is that you have almost like a real-time indicator of who in the world feel, or who at least in the state or the country feels the way you do about something. And that can be really isolating to people. And it can be really sort of shocking to people to sort of feel like, wow, the world doesn't care about the same things as me. And that I think makes people feel lonely or surprised, and they've lost trust for the fellow people in their community.
Talking to Ryan Martin, psychology professor at UW Green Bay, author of the book Why We Get Mad: How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. We're talking about anger in the United States in the year 2022. More of it. It feels that way often, even if we can't quite measure that. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you see it in your workplace, in your interactions with others in person or online? Have you found ways in your life to channel your anger, to say, hey, something's bugging me, and do something good with it instead of something bad with it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ryan, we've talked a lot in the past. A big message you have is that anger doesn't have to be a bad thing. We're going to get to the positive uses in a bit, but we know that there are negative outcomes. You mentioned, you know, a highway shooting. Nothing good about that. Snapping at someone in person or starting an online argument. What are some of the things that may trigger those negative outcomes of anger?
Yeah, I mean, there are a host of negative consequences that come from anger, probably more so than people even realize. I mean, there's physical fights, there's verbal fights, there's online fights, there's physical health problems, damaged relationships, all sorts of things, including one that I think often goes unnoticed. And those are some other negative emotions that can oftentimes stem from anger, meaning I get angry, I do something I regret, and then I feel sad or guilty or scared or anxious or all these other things. And I think a lot of the times those outcomes are, you know, they're triggered by the same sorts of things that the positive outcomes can be, right? There's a provocation, and then we respond to that provocation by interpreting it somehow and then acting on that interpretation. A big piece of it, though, is, so what have we learned, and how did we learn to express our anger when we were growing up? How did we learn to deal with it in those moments? And if we learned potentially maladaptive expression styles, we're going to use those in ways that lead to a lot of these negative outcomes. So if I learn to yell and scream, well, then that's the thing I do when I'm provoked, and then that might lead to some of these potentially negative outcomes, like damaged relationships, or even the sort of guilt and sadness that comes later on.
How about, you know, something that might be a baseline generator of anger for us versus the thing that triggers it? So maybe I'm generally angry about something, and that social media post or the person sort of cutting me off in traffic gets that disproportionate response. How do we start to untangle those in our minds?
Yeah, really great question. That's the piece we haven't talked about so much yet, is that we've got this sort of undercurrent that I would just say our mood state, but defining mood broadly at any given time. So how stressed I am, how tired I am, how hungry I am, how angry I am, you know, and that I'm carrying this around with me. And then those little stressors that we hit, you know, the person who kind of cuts us off, or being slowed down by someone, or getting an email that feels a little bit hostile from a coworker. All of those things, you know, they feel like much bigger things than they might actually be, because we're carrying all this weight around with us. And so the little thing quickly becomes a big thing based on our current mood state.
Let's talk about some coping mechanisms for a couple different scenarios. First, if our response to anger is that impulsive reaction, whether it's yelling or violence or something else that we probably know is negative, how do we start to tackle it? How do we train ourselves not to have to do that impulsive thing in the moment?
We use the perfect word there, and it's how do we train ourselves? Because it takes practice, like anything else. You know, we spend a lifetime developing our current expression approaches, and so it takes time to figure out how to undo those, and it takes practice. There's really two things I would suggest kind of right out of the gate. One of those is to actually start to, when you're not angry, in those moments when you're sort of at peace, to take time and reflect on how you want to handle those situations when they come up. If we go in through life saying and telling ourselves that we want to have an identity as someone who is calm, someone who can stay collected in those moments, someone who can control themselves, it is a big piece of the puzzle. It's we're making that decision in advance of the frustrating thing. The next piece, though, is to reflect afterwards. And this is a part that I think can be really hard for people, is after they've had that kind of outburst, after they've done something that they regret, to reflect back on it and to take time to actually sort of pay attention to how you reacted, to talk yourself through how you wish you would have handled it. Really, what we're trying to do is figure out, we've got to build or identify and find a way to pause in the moment. And that can be really difficult for people to figure out in the moment. So being able to reflect on it later gives you time to sort of practice it in your mind. Practice, okay, so how do I do this? How do I, next time I am encountered by some provocation, how do I stop myself from losing my cool? It's a little bit like athletes watching game tape, right? You know, it's about trying to figure out, okay, so what do I do next time?
Let's take this to the Thanksgiving table. And I think we've had this conversation before, holidays before, Ryan. We know, me and a cousin, whatever, or sibling or whatever, by and large, we love each other, but we know how to push each other's buttons. We've got some good material to work with, say, coming out of the midterm elections. How do we make sure we don't spiral into something?
Yeah, I think one of the first things I would say is, you know, figure out now. We're a couple days away. Figure out now what your goals are for that, for the holiday. You know, do you want to get through this without an altercation? And if you do, then make that your priority. And I think that's fundamentally different than if your priority is to say, well, I want to score some points, right? You know, that going into it with, okay, I want to get through this. I want to still get along afterwards. So I'm going to make the relationship the priority. It becomes a very different interaction. A couple different ways to handle it, either in the moment or in advance. I mean, depending on the relationship, I think you can actually reach out in advance and say to the person, you know what, I want this to be a fun, relaxing day. I really want to make sure we don't talk about politics or any of those provocations. Can we leave that off the table for this get together and see how that goes? Another possibility is just to kind of figure out, maybe you talk to your partner or you talk to someone else and say, hey, let's have an out if the conversation starts going that way. How can we intentionally, you know, deflect in those moments maybe there's a phrase you can say to try and get out of that conversation if it's going a way you don't want it to go.
We're talking about anger, the year in anger, and getting ready for the holidays with Ryan Martin, professor of psychology at UW Green Bay, author of the book Why We Get Mad. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where did you see, hear, or feel anger in 2022? Did you see a lot of it around the midterm elections? Do you dread what I was just talking about, that conflict at Thanksgiving or other holidays? Have you found ways to work around that with a family member or other loved one you disagree with but want to get along with? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about anger in the year 2022. Ryan Martin stays with us, professor of psychology at UW Green Bay, author of the book Why We Get Mad, How to Use Your Anger for Positive Change. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your observations at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve is on the line with us now in Stoughton. Steve, hi. Are you there, Steve? Not hearing you, Steve, if you're talking. I got a note about Steve's question, though. Steve wonders if there's any correlation between testosterone and anger. If so, should we be teaching and learning more about it? Ryan, what do we know?
Yeah, this is a big, tough question and probably too much to answer in just a few minutes here. But I can tell you, historically, people have really pointed to links between testosterone and aggression specifically. And finding there being a lot of research connecting these things. When I say aggression, I mean the intent to hurt someone. So a little bit different from anger, but related. What we've seen, though, more recently is that a lot of that research was done using animals and didn't necessarily apply to human beings. So we see that testosterone predicts aggression, but only specific types of aggression, things related to like social hierarchy seeking and things like that. To connect it back to anger a little bit, more recent research has really looked at, and largely through testosterone replacement therapies and things like that, and the invention of that, has looked at the ability or looked more specifically at anger and found that indeed there does seem to be a bit of a link there, being able to see that higher instances of testosterone do predict anger. It's not the only thing that matters, but it's something that does seem to play a role.
Thanks for sending that question along, Steve. We also heard from Austin Lafarge, who couldn't stay on the line, wanted to ask about anger as an expression of other unresolved emotions or anxiety, and getting those under control first can help with anger management.
Yeah, I love the way this person asked this question, because it's very different from how I usually hear it, which is it true that anger is a secondary emotion, which is a very common claim? And I think the answer is that anger can be a secondary emotion, but it isn't always. So does it emerge from other negative feeling states like sadness or anxiety or guilt or jealousy or other sort of unresolved feeling states? It absolutely can, including some things we wouldn't necessarily consider emotions, like just feeling hurt, which can reveal itself in sadness or, frankly, can reveal itself in some anger. I do think it's worth noting, though, is that sometimes when we talk about anger being secondary, and this caller definitely didn't do that, but sometimes when we refer to it as being secondary, I think it ends up minimizing some very real angry feelings that are justified. And we need to acknowledge that anger is something that can be just the primary thing that a person is feeling. And I think that's important.
Talking to Ryan Martin from UW Green Bay, expert there on the psychology of anger. Still time for your calls on the topic at 800-642-1234. Ryan, let's talk about some of the positive, constructive uses of anger. Let's get back to the world of politics now. If someone's unhappy with one of the results from this year's election, and it was a mixed bag, somebody's probably angry about something, or that a particular issue isn't getting the attention they think it deserves in the political world, what are some constructive ways they can channel that feeling of anger?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked, because it's really important for people to know that anger isn't inherently negative. It's frankly one of the ways that your brain alerts you to injustice or goal blocking or having been wronged and things like that. And so it can be a good thing depending on what we do with it. And when it comes to the what we do with it, we've seen countless examples of people channeling their anger into those positive outcomes, whether it is, I mean, frankly, voting out of anger is one of those potentially positive ways to channel your anger. So is protesting. So are letters to the editor. So is donating money to particular candidates. All of those are ways that people can channel their anger into something something good and positive. People use it to create art. They use it. They channel it into music and writing. Problem solving. There's all sorts of good things. Even good assertive communication can be a way of channeling that anger into something positive. That, of course, I mean, assertive communication might, you know, offend people, but it's different than the kind of aggression that we see oftentimes really harming people.
So assertive communication isn't me yelling at someone. I'm guessing it's me laying out why their actions have made me angry.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And thank you for that clarification. It's a way of sort of voicing your perspective on something in a way that is that might be different from the person you're talking with, but it isn't necessarily violating their rights in any way.
Now, a resource you pointed toward us, and you're quoted here heavily, a new mental health resource website called WonderMind. And I understand you're a fan of this. What do you like about it?
Yeah, I'm really excited about WonderMind. This is a resource that just came up recently. It's Selena Gomez and some others have put together this mental health resource. A big piece of what I like is the simplicity with which it's all organized and how easy it is to find a lot of great resources. So there's the opportunity to, there's a button right on the homepage that says filter by feels and allows you to click on it and then go and look at, okay, I want to learn more about happiness or sadness or envy or anger in this case. And then there's just a handful of articles there related to those specific topics. So it's a really valuable mental health resource that I'm super excited to have been involved in.
Is there anything else apart from this WonderMind resource making you feel optimistic about anger and the way we deal with it as we wrap up this kind of wild couple of years?
Yeah, you know, there are some things. I see it through my experiences on social media. And this is going to sound odd to people, perhaps, but I see a generation younger than me that is really reflective about their feelings, a generation that really does care about their feelings, the feelings of others, that is sort of aware of mental health in all sorts of positive ways. And I think those are things that I feel optimistic for. I think that what I would call emotional literacy does seem to be on the rise, and that's a good thing.
And leave us with a bit of advice, Ryan, a quick tip to not go with that initial negative response when we get angry.
Yeah, it goes back to something I said for kind of how to handle Thanksgiving mm-hmm. dinner. Figure out your goals. Think about what you really want in this situation. Is it to get revenge? Is it to get to work safely? Is it to preserve a relationship? Start there, and that'll help you stay calm in those difficult moments.
Ryan, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
That's Ryan Martin, professor of psychology and associate dean of the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences at UW-Green Bay. We talked with him about anger in 2022, how to recognize and manage anger in ourselves and others, and why, as he said, anger doesn't have to be a negative emotion. It can motivate positive action. You can read more. That website we mentioned is called WonderMind. We'll put up a link at the Central Time website, wpr.org/Central Time. You can see Ryan and many other mental health experts quoted there on anger and a wide variety of other topics. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, Get some advice on protecting your health during the holiday travel season. A doctor is going to join the show with advice on COVID, safety, and more. You can join in with your questions right now. Email ideas at WPR.org. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. A classic Thanksgiving activity, at least in my family, is to watch some or all of the National Dog Show on Thanksgiving Day. We'll have to wait until Thursday to see who wins in each category and best in show, but we do have some dog winners already. The top names for dogs in 2022. This comes from a pet insurance company called Trupanion. Technically, it's the top dog names for dogs insured by that company. Here's their top 10 list, counting down from 10 to 1. Number 10, dog name Max. 9, Teddy. 8, Bailey. Number 7 is Cooper. 6, Lucy. 5, Milo. 4 is Daisy. Top 3, Bella. Number 2, Charlie. And the number 1 dog name, Luna. Bonus, the top 3 breeds are Labrador Retriever, Golden Doodle, and Golden Retriever. I say they're all winners. This is Central Time.